I did want to ask John if you could comment a little bit. This patient did very well on a checkpoint inhibitor, but if you could comment a little bit on your experience with checkpoint inhibitors in HL in terms of toxicity, tolerability issues, what are the kinds of things that you run into? And in particular, I'm curious about pulmonary toxicity in this setting.
Sure. So I'd say in general, the data about both nivolumab and pembrolizumab are that they're well tolerated. And I think patients generally, if they're the typical person that's progressed through a couple of lines of therapy, had a transplant, et cetera, find it a lot easier than the other things they've been on in general. It's interesting, when you look at the data as a whole, one of the things you do see are higher rates of infusion-related reactions with checkpoint inhibitors in lymphoma patients compared to non-lymphoma patients. That's one of the things that sort of stands out in the pembro data set, but they're still not that common, and they're not usually higher grade events that really necessitate doing anything. But milder infusion reactions, I think, are more common in the lymphoma patients than else.
Why do you think that is?
Again, it's probably reflecting part of the immune milieu of these patients, and I think it's a simplistic answer, but I'll leave it at that. I think in terms of the other toxicities, fatigue comes up as a thing. The thyroid metabolically, you'll pick up TSH abnormalities. Often it's something you can watch. They tend to be euthyroid when you look at T3s or T4s, but occasionally they might develop hypo or hyperthyroidism and need management. You'll see some other blood test abnormalities on occasion, but generally they're quite well tolerated. I think the issue is the frequency of coming back for visits. There is patient fatigue in that regard. There's also fatigue on the clinic in terms of you're back all the time, but people feel well. And I think in general, it's viewed much more positively than the traditional chemotherapies they've had before.
Craig, again, any comments, any pearls of wisdom about side effects?
So I think that we have a paper coming out in The Oncologist that I wrote on about immune-related side effects for the masses. My biggest concern are the weird ones, like headache with pituitary abnormalities you got to pay attention to. As oncologists, the further away we get from internal medicine, the more of a anxiety that we get. And I would say that outside of thyroid dysfunction, having adrenal dysfunction and interstitial nephritis and a few of the other host of endocrinopathies are to me are very concerning. So you need to have endocrine on board, I think, is very important. Your question about pulmonary toxicity is an interesting one. You can retreat with pulmonary toxicity. You have to just play with it a little while. The patients can get breaks and they can go on steroids. It's not necessarily, the awful pulmonary toxicity that we're thinking about in patients that are ventilator dependent. It's really more of a imaging abnormality. You get tests and you see that there's increased interstitial markings, and then you speak to the patient and you ask them, well, how's your breathing? Oh, I've been breathing a little bit worse. And then you sort of can play with it a little bit. I have a patient on one of the Nevo studies, in the original Nevo study. She's had pulmonary dysfunction 4 times. She's on dose 87 of nivolumab. So you can play with it. But I will end by saying, outside of ibrutinib in CLL, which was, from my point of view, the greatest thing that I've ever seen in lymphoma management, Nevo and Pembro are just, they're beyond belief. Coming back from death.
Interesting, though, that you were mentioning there, though, in terms of restarting after pulmonary toxicity. I was just flashing on the fact that your colleague in pulmonary, Matt Hellman, actually looked at that in lung cancer. And I think they found that, of course, it's maybe a different scenario. They have prior, they're older, they have lung disease. But I think they found that they saw a fair amount of recurrent pulmonary problems when they restarted. I think it was like 50%.
Yeah, we're dealing with
but it's a
28-year-old women
right.
mostly. Maybe this is a disease enriched for women, and the relapse setting is even more enriched for women because they weren't radiated the first time. So it's really, we take care of young women, and they're fairly indestructible young women.
Justin, you had a
Yeah, I just had one case of a lady who had ABVD and had bleomycin toxicity, and then she relapsed, went through transplant, relapsed again, treated with nivolumab, and she had interstitial lung toxicity.
Well, that's a setup for disaster.
I don't know. Have you seen any correlation between bleo lung toxicity then developing the
Yeah,
nivolumab?
absolutely. In fact, when I talk about this, and somebody who has a history, and John may be, feel different, but if you have a history of either bleomycin, radiation, or carmustine-induced pulmonary dysfunction requiring steroid support, I don't give checkpoint inhibitors.
So there's an increased incidence, or is it just that their lung is compromised and you're afraid of layering on that on top of it?
Probably. You're already almost there to get a problem, and it's probably a component of the both, but I'm not so sure it's defensible to give a pulmonary toxic agent to somebody who's already had steroid necessitating pulmonary dysfunction.
I remember actually I asked you that question because he had posed it. I remember when you presented that case, and I thought you said that there isn't much of a or maybe it hasn't been looked at. Do you know, like, again, has it been looked at what happens when you give a checkpoint inhibitor to somebody with prior resolved now bleomycin toxicity?
If it was steroid necessitating, I mean, there is evidence in both of the Nevo and Pembro studies that there is an increased incidence.
Any other questions the three of you have?
Just quick one, like, is there any dose thing with the nivolumab and Hodgkin's? Because in solid tumor, we have moved to fixed dosing and now every 4 weeks dosing.
Yeah, the problem is that the research studies don't allow you to go to the once a month nivolumab. I haven't started anybody on the once a month nivolumab for Hodgkin lymphoma. Have you done that?
No.
I don't know. I'm like nervous. I mean, we're not taking care of solid tumor, we're babying the patients, and, you know, but I do think it's very patient-friendly to do it once a month. Actually, what John said is very, you know, I mean, the patients are wonderful. When they come back for dose 61 every 2 weeks, there's almost, there's only so much chit-chatting you can do with them, you know, what happened, you know, so you know their whole life story by now.